God.
It's PowerWorks time. It is podcast time. We're talking cars. Glenn Powers here. We are at PowerWorks Garage, and we're going to have a lot of fun. This is going to be a lot of fun. It's been a while since we've sat down, although in podcast world, you've noticed no break.
Nobody knows. We're so prolific. So prolific through the normal part of the year.
So it's, you know.
Summer doesn't affect us too much, does it?
Not really. Not really. Yeah, you were at Auto Mechanica.
Yeah.
How was it?
Not great this year.
Oh, no.
The footfall didn't
That's
seem...
not what I wanted to hear.
No, I mean, there was a lot of interesting stuff. I'm talking about from you know, from their point of view.
So Auto Mechanica, for anyone who's listening, it's a trade show geared towards the automotive industry.
Yeah, Messe Frankfurt that run it, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is a big deal.
Yeah, it was obviously huge, vast World Trade Center. And, you know, it was me and DJ had done a Hyrox fitness event there at the start of September. And obviously, you know, you walk in and you just see how amazing it is that they turned those just what is just a warehouse, which you appreciate when we were doing the Hyrox thing, into like well lit. You know, there's advertising hoardings and the booths and everything. It's a massive, massive thing that they put up, run and take down in the space of a week. So great effort, and logistically it was fantastic, but the footfall didn't seem the same. And, you know, they got a bit of a pit stop challenge where they've got a caddy van on a scissor lift, and it was like, how quick can you change four tyres? And if me and DJ had gone together, we'd have definitely done that because of the competitive nature of us. But, you know, there was nobody even taking part in it. And
oh, man.
It just didn't seem... I mean, I went with Peter Eagle from Borgenbeck, the technical director.
Yep, yep.
And we went to meet the guys in the factory that produce our air suspension. So we've finished, and now we've launched the full range of air suspension for the Land Rover models.
Nice. I saw, speaking of that, I saw the other day at a set of lights, was with the wife in car, and I saw maybe an LR4 with air suspension and the front
is
of
down.
The air, it was not. And I went, oh, that must be a real pain to drive.
Yeah. Bouncing all over the place. Yeah. One of the problems with the Land Rover stuff, the reason we went there first is you could almost use the word ubiquitous, can't you, for describing Land Rovers here, but the use of a Land Rover, typically a lot of people will still use them off-road here.
Right.
So easy to drive in the desert. And there's a huge owners club on Facebook and other platforms where people are using them all throughout the winter. So what they'll do is they'll put oversized tires and different wheels to give them a bit of lift and give them more traction in the sand when they let the tire pressure down. The problem with that is that when your air suspension fails, you don't have the same clearance in the wheel arch.
Yeah.
So then people just cannot drive them.
Right.
So it becomes not just, because they're not the most expensive air suspension, even from the agency.
Really?
They're not the most expensive if you put them next to a Volkswagen Group or a Mercedes, or, you know, they're not in that category. But when you're in the depths of the desert and you get stuck because you can't rotate the wheels because they're stuck in the wheel arch, that's an expensive recovery. And I work for AAA, and that's what we used to do, and it ain't cheap sending the, you know, the skip loader or the 6x6 out into the desert to lift you off the sand and bring you out. So, you know, there's that to do. Plus, there's the damage done by actually the fact that you've already tried to drive it and the wheel's jammed in the wheel well.
Right.
So you've got all of that damage, plus the fact, well, the initial fault was the air suspension.
Yeah.
So it can be quite expensive. And yeah, we did, with the support of the Land Rover Owners Club here, we tested about 4 full sets.
Okay.
And we had fantastic feedback from them. In fact, the stage 3 testing that we did when we put them on the cars, at no point have we had, and there was no development from that stage. A lot of the times you'll design a part, it gets tested in a factory, and then it will be improved, and then the price point will be agreed, and then it will be changed to meet a price point, and then it goes onto the cars, and then there's a problem, so we fix that. We had no problems with it.
Wow.
And to be fair, Pete did say that his purchasing director in the UK said that this factory was the best of the best.
So you and
Pete, it was going to be good.
Went to Auto Mechanica.
That was the main mission.
Okay.
We went there. They'd invited me on into the premium club, which, to all intents and purposes, from what I could understand, just gave me a day's free parking, which I didn't use anyway. I mean, I'm not queuing to park, even if it's free. And so we parked over and walked over the bridge. But there was the academy thing that we've done before.
Yeah.
Again, nobody in there. And it's like, it needs to be more interactive.
Yeah. It was pretty interactive when we did it.
Yeah, we did it. And there was a lot of people sat listening to us talk.
People were standing in the the walkway.
It was quite busy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it needs a bit of a shuffle now because
it's post COVID. They're getting back into their game.
Yeah, but I went last year and it was all right. Even the gifts, like this pen. DJ's just complimented the pen and then moaned at me because I didn't grab him one. But DJ went last year, and when I'd forgotten about it, to be honest, and Pete had reminded me we had a meeting. So we went on the last day. And so DJ never got time to go, but you know, there wasn't really you go around there and it's sometimes like you get accosted almost by the people on the stands.
Yeah.
You know, you gonna come to, there's none of that either. Now, maybe it was the fatigue of the third day and what have you, but that's the day to do your business.
Yeah.
It was a little bit worrying, and I think it's something that probably mirrors where the motor industry is as a whole, actually. People don't really know where we're going with it. I sent you
you sent me that wonderful podcast.
Podcast, Patrick McDavid podcast, where I like his stuff. But that was really interesting. The first 20 minutes they were talking about the auto union strike in the US.
Well, I mean, and when you start looking at what the UAW is asking for, and you know, we're talking, you know, 40% wage increase, reduced work hours.
Yeah.
I grew up in Ajax, Ontario, which is, you know, two towns over from Oshawa.
Yeah.
In Canada, big GM line.
Yeah, big GM plant. Yeah.
I knew lots of people who worked at GM, and
a lot of the GM stuff here is all Canadian built.
And they were getting paid well then. It was monotonous. There was a lot of work, assembly line injury, repetitive motion injuries and stuff. But, you know, then they got hammered with EVs, and those lines, a lot of those lines got cut there, and that really threw Oshawa into a spin. They've brought back some things. Sometimes, I mean, I'm going to win no UAW friends here, but sometimes I wonder if the United Auto Workers aren't just trying to revive a little bit of the glory days.
Yeah, which unfortunately are gone, you know? And I kind of agree with what they say, that the CEO, I forget the lady's name, apologies, the joys of Google, but she was
Mary Barra.
That's right. So she got paid something like $93 million dollars in a year, right?
Yeah.
Now, that was something like a 200 or whatever percent. Don't quote me, but there was a huge, huge increase on the previous payment that she'd had. So, on the face of it, numbers on a page, you would think, and you'd be fair to think, and in a liberal socialist maybe society, you'd be like, okay, well, she's had more, so why haven't we had more? Unfortunately, the fact is, if they work this year and make no money, they'll still get paid their salary. She won't get anything because she'll be paid based on performance.
There's an interesting piece. Just when we're talking about money.
Yeah.
GM. Oh, no, sorry. I think it's Chrysler, actually.
What do they call themselves? Stellantis.
Stellantis. It could be GM. It could be Chrysler. I can't. You know what? I can't. I just read it yesterday, and I was in passing, and it's right here. Hold on. There's a link. Yeah. But live on action here. I put the link in because it's GM. GM just secured a new $6 billion credit line.
Nice. Nice.
And they're saying the strike has cost them $200 million already.
One of the other things with this is that, again, it gets quite political really quickly. It's become a political issue.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be when it's... But they were bailed out, weren't they?
Yes. Ford wasn't. Ford was.
Ford weren't, no.
But the other ones, yeah, bailed out.
And it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah. As soon as you get that situation where you've bailed people out and the men and women on the lines have done their job for you, that that's a challenge.
Yeah, we had it in the UK with the nurses, and they I think they went on strike because they want a 35% pay increase. Now, I think traditionally, and I've known and do know a few people that are nurses in the UK, I think traditionally there was always an annual 1 or 2% pay rise that was just a given. But where are they going to get 35% from? So you might as well ask them 200%.
Might as well, because who's going to be able to buy those cars?
Yeah, so I don't know where. And look, also, and Ford, we've talked about before with the selling incomplete cars with the, we'll retrofit things when they come in stock. So they've got nothing to sell anyway. They're building cars. I mean, I don't know. I'm not involved with the union. I'm not involved with this particular union, that's for sure. I'm not in the country. I don't, you know, you talk the phrase, the Rust Belt in America, and the whole, you know, mythology almost now about Detroit and what it was like there. Obviously, something that's passed me by. But, you know, I think people have to realize there's got to be a different tack here.
Yeah.
And
you got to start thinking differently.
Yeah, and maybe it's a matter of, okay, well, I'm going to say I want more money, but I am going to say I'm willing to train to do EVs instead of saying no, I make engines.
Or, you know, whatever they're working on in the background, because I'm sure there's, you know, we drone on about it as hydrogen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you got to know that all the major car companies are looking at hydrogen. There's no question in my mind. We're going to milk electricity as long as we can, just like we're milking internal combustion engines.
As soon as the fossil fuel industry gets into hydrogen production, which you still need electricity and energy to do anyway.
Exactly.
Unless you're going to go and scoop it out of the sun, which is probably quite hard.
Yeah, Elon Musk is trying to figure that out at this moment.
You know, then I'm sure hydrogen will come online because people can make money out of it. And like we've said before, I personally, it's not ideal, but I do not care who gets rich out of it if it's the right thing to do. I think I think it'll be a benefit to everybody. So they'll get, but this, as I say, Auto Mechanica, sort of the auto union strike in America, the US.
Were they talking about it there?
No, but it just sort of, when you sort of think about everything that's going on, you think this place is dead and there's not much happening and nobody's got any enthusiasm and there's nobody wanting to do deals and everyone's on strike in the North American Auto Workers Union. And you just think, what's happening to the industry? What's going on? What do we do? Used cars are 3 times more expensive than they were relatively 4 years ago. Now, obviously, everyone can keep saying COVID this and COVID that, but COVID's gone.
COVID's gone. We're post-COVID now.
Yeah, get on with it. What people, and a lot of it comes down to the fact that we live in the UAE, and the UAE there's a fantastic interview that gets clipped every now and again. And I see it on Instagram from time to time with Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who, I think it's a US, it might even be something like 60 minutes.
That is 60 minutes.
Yeah,
and he's
saying, why do you want, you know, this is a bit ambitious. The interviewer is saying, this is a bit ambitious. Why, you know, these sort of things take 200 years. He's like, yeah, no, but I want my people to have it now. What an attitude. Like, but that attitude needs to be replicated. Now, I understand he doesn't have to deal with a 4-year election cycle. He doesn't have to only do 2 terms, and he doesn't have to. But he's got a vision and he's implementing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And for good or for bad, and it's pretty good here, right? We're safe. We have everything. Like, you know, there's trains flying around on a rail in the sky, effectively, with no drivers on. And there's very few breakdowns on it. And it moves masses of people. There's buildings and there's AC everywhere and there's oases everywhere. And it's an amazing place. If they put their heads to it, and they are starting to manufacture here, there's a big push to manufacture, but we're a small country, 10, 11 million population, you know what, a million native population. But if they can push and say, you know what, we can't get any new cars. And have you noticed how every showroom that opens up now is a Chinese brand manufacturer? Why don't we make our own? Yeah. Why don't we go to people like Ford and say, what are you missing? Yeah. What are you missing? Can we build it for you? Look at Saudi. Look at the ambition there. Everybody's talking about it. All the big fights are happening there, and all the big entertainment events are going there now. You've got huge, huge corporations, UFC, WWE, all involved with them over there. Why aren't other people involved? Jaguar Land Rover do their testing over there and in the empty quarter over here. Why aren't they involved? There must be some manufacturing voids that can be filled locally. And I come from the UK. And at Auto Mechanica, one of the more telling sides of it is you walked in and there's always a big Turkish presence. Turkish manufacturing is huge. And obviously we're in the region, so the Turkish section is massive. And the German section also, obviously, massive. The UK section had like four stands in it.
That's crazy. Nothing made there anymore.
And I was with Pete from Borg & Beck, as I've said, and that's a British, First Line is the company. And, oh, thanks, James. And we've got, you know, that's a British company, but we're meeting with a factory in China.
The brains are coming from the UK, but the brawn is coming from, you know, other countries.
Is it the brain? It's so short-sighted.
Yeah.
Why are we making things locally? I genuinely believe that America's a good example because, what is there, 330 million people in America, and they're quite known. They're known for being patriotic. They put flags everywhere, this and that. And they really should be making their own cars. And I'm not saying go out and put propaganda everywhere and say, oh, don't buy a Volkswagen and don't buy a Mercedes and, you know, don't buy a Toyota, don't buy a Kia, buy American. Because that, to be fair, is probably quite an attitude there for a lot of people anyway. But at least when you see a problem like this, it's going to cost them a lot of money, this. It's going to cost the whole economy,
back to the strike here. It's all the ancillary things, right? And since it's parts and delivery on demand these days, it's everything. It's the shipping guys.
If I want a part for your Jeep, and we want the original because there's no other option, and they're not making them, the price goes up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the value of a car is only going down unless it's a... You know, it's an old classic. The value of the car is going down, but the cost of everything else is going up. But it's going up so much quicker than it ever has before.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's insane. So, it just makes you shake your head. And it's, you know, what's the option? Well, just, you know, carpool.
Yeah, bus, somebody was saying that
driving a car altogether.
Someone was saying that in California, the fuel had gone up to like nearly $7 a gallon.
I can't believe that.
Ridiculous.
I mean,
pricing.
I get it, but it's just, like, who could afford that?
That's nearly UK prices.
Yeah. Who can afford that? You can't afford that. I mean, it's same in the UK. People are paying that for fuel. They're deciding what are they going to have for dinner. It's beans on toast 5 days a week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're deciding, okay, breakfast for the kids, hopefully they get it at school because we can't afford breakfast. So we're going to have, you know, put together their lunch, we're going to have one meal a day.
Yeah.
And someone's going, nah, it's not like that. It's like that in a lot of places.
I think it was Jordan Peterson that I heard say it. And I've heard other people say it actually. To be in the top 1% globally, you have to earn $34,000 a year. In terms of finances, $34,000 a year, and you're in the top 1% globally. $34,000 a year, you can't live in a Western country, right? You're pretty much struggling there.
I'm looking at what it's going to cost me to rent
a place. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it's going to cost me $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
Just to rent.
Yeah, so when you're talking, I mean, California, that $7 a gallon must have been sort of in the LA area, I would have thought, but whatever.
The prices don't fluctuate but they do, then...
You know, what's rent in California?
Well, forget it. You can't afford to live there. You want to live somewhere down by, you know, Santa Monica, where you see in all the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
No. You
I don't.
You're not living there.
So it's absolutely mental that we're talking about, you know, problems where people aren't getting paid enough to make stuff. We need to make it. I think we need to make it. And
I know that's what the UAW guys are standing up for, United Auto Workers. They, you know, let's keep it here. Let's keep making it, but let's fair compensation for all we've put into this and all that's going to come. And we're with you. We're with you, but we also need to get paid.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they've gone in at 40% expecting a negotiation and they might take 20, but I still think 20, where's that coming from? 20%. That's got to be passed on to somebody.
That's a car I can't buy.
Yeah.
You know, and then it becomes the issue of, okay, well, someone will buy the brand new cars, but I'm going to be looking for a used car. It's going to take at least 5 years for that car to come into the used market.
Yeah.
And then I'm priced out of the automobile market.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to be quite careful, because at the moment, if you take General Motors as the example, because you've got the three distinct brands of.
And it's crazy that they're striking with all three.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
Yeah. Altogether. Yeah. Yeah. Never happened, has it? Has it been like 80 years or something?
Some crazy number like that. 146,000 people.
Yeah.
Or on strike.
But if you take General Motors with Chevy, GMC, and Cadillac, you can get effectively, just like with Volkswagen, Audi, Skoda, and Seat, you can get the same model car at different price points. How expensive is a Cadillac going to be if they have to get paid extra? I mean, you know, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about aspirational brand.
Yeah.
You
don't be able to afford that car. And I want a Cadillac, or I want a Lincoln, but okay, different. But you get the sense. I mean, coming from North America, Cadillac or Lincoln, that's your aspiration.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and you got a Camaro in the driveway.
Yeah.
And maybe a Corvette, and away we go. But that's it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be, I'm not going to be driving a Cadillac in Canada.
Yeah. Well, I guess the root of it is obviously the inflation, right? Well, people can't, they're paying $30,000 a year in rent, then.
Well, you rent, and then you got your food prices are going up, and inflation's hitting everyone. And of course, we're blaming the what's going on in the Ukraine, and that, you know, that has
that's a ripple. That's a frightening one when you consider the money that's been funneled one way.
And
then there's 146,000 people wanting a pay rise.
And then all of the grain supplements and all things that come out of that country that go to other places where they're making foodstuffs, ultra processed foods that we rely on, unfortunately. Yeah. Oh, it's. And just the money that's going there.
Yeah. It's very strange times, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very strange. It's interesting. Gives people lots to talk about. But, yeah. I mean, it worried me. I mean, back to it, it just worried me with the state of the industry. The amount of conversations I've had with customers over parts prices recently.
Yeah.
You know, we've had customers, and we don't penalize them. A lot of places, and understandably so, we'll say if you bring your own parts, we'll charge you more labor because
we're
missing out on a bit of margin. Of course, we make a bit of money on parts. One thing that's not necessarily known that well here is that, unlike, let's say, Europe, which is the market I'm familiar with from the UK, if I buy a part, I have a warranty on it, regardless of where it's installed.
Yeah, okay.
As long as it's been fitted correctly and I have a receipt for that,
okay.
I have a warranty on it. I don't get that. If I buy a part for your car, I don't get a warranty.
Hold on. You buy a part from, in my case, I drive a Wrangler, so you're going over to Jeep Chrysler.
Yeah.
You buy a part, there's no warranty on it?
They won't give me a warranty
on it. Oh, come on.
Now, how far I could push that with Chrysler Middle East, I don't know. But then the solution is, okay, bring the car in.
Uh-huh.
Take the car in. They want 3,000 dirhams because they've not seen the car for so long. They have to do a full inspection of it.
Yeah,
so I've got to pay them 3,000 dirhams to get warranty on a 400 dirham part.
Yeah, so no one's going to do that. And
then people don't appreciate that. When I buy a part and we put a small margin on it to make the money on it, we have to hope that, because again, human error happens. People make these parts. Human error happens if they're fitted incorrectly. We have to give you a warranty. So if I do a job on your car and then, you know, something goes wrong with that in the first 6-12 months, I'm going to give you warranty on it. You're going to bring it back, but I've not got warranty from my supplier. So I've got to hopefully have pulled enough money from the 100 other jobs to have covered the cost of that.
Yeah. That hurts.
Yeah, it does.
I don't think people realize that.
No. And the prices are going so, so expensive.
Yeah.
So if you have a margin of 15%, 15% on 100 dirhams is 15 dirhams, but 15% on 500 dirhams, all of a sudden you're talking 75, and it's like, hang on a minute.
Well, and I have that experience with a silly part, the cover for the coolant overflow.
Yeah.
A little plastic cover that's essentially like your water bottle, 75 dirhams. 75 dirhams. Now, and I know someone just said you could probably get the whole, you know, that tank. Oh, no. That's like 500-600 dirhams. Yeah. For this piece of molded plastic, which is ridiculous, because you know that it costs to make about 50 fills.
Yeah, definitely. As an individual unit cost and the amount they've made, it's 50 fills made. Yeah,
And it's insane. Insane.
Yeah. It's difficult. DJ was in here pulling his hair out the other day. On the same day, we had three customers that complained about parts prices.
Yeah.
Now, one of them was a little bit out of context, and when we'd been through it, we realised what had happened, and it was a customer had had a price on the job at the end of last week, so a week ago, and then they'd approved it on the afternoon of the Friday. They'd gone out on a Saturday with their friends to brunch, mentioned it, and, oh, that's too high, blah, blah, bring it to my guy.
Always happens. Everyone's got a guy.
Their garage sends them a quote, and it was like, from our quote of 9K, theirs was 5. Now, we aren't the most expensive guys in the world. We're not the cheapest either, but we're not
double the cost of
anybody.
So how did they have such a...
So when we worked it out and went through it, what had happened is they'd listed they'd got a compressor on there for AC. It was a GLE Mercedes, and they'd got a compressor on there, which was their selling price was less than what I was buying the one that we were selling for.
Huh.
Fortunately, I knew this garage, and I knew the owner well, and we knew where he'd got his quote from. There were three variations of model for compressor.
Yeah.
So we quoted it, we'd got the vehicle in, and we'd physically got the matching sample, and we got the right one. They'd taken the middle of the three and priced it.
So then
had the car gone there anyway, they'd have ended up with the more expensive one.
Yeah.
So obviously it's all right saying that to a customer.
Yeah.
Easy for me to say. She'd already approved the work and we'd already done the work.
Yeah.
In the end, me and DJ just ended up saying, look, we'll do the parts at cost, and you've been a customer of ours, but it turns out you've obviously got a friend in another garage, so you're not going to come back to us anyway. Why would you? You've got a friend. Yeah. You're going to support your friend, which is understandable. So we weren't.
She might come back because you've been honest with her. And
well, we can only do what we can do.
And at the end of the day, she's going to go there, and they give you you get the estimate, and then when you finally get the part, it's
we'd also got more work scope on it. So they in fairness hadn't seen the car. The compressor had failed mechanically.
Yeah.
So we had to flush the whole system out. Now, when we do that, all of the lines that we can remove, we do remove. So there's a lot of labor. There was about 1,200 dirhams in labor and flushing on it. So,
which people, again, never realize when you've got these things.
Which, again, if it goes to that garage, again, I said I know them, so they will do the job right.
Yeah.
So they'd have said, oh, we need to do this as well. And then all of a sudden, it's
the same price.
Yeah. So, BMW X5, the guy's going to go... It was funny.
Okay, so what's going on with the BMW X5?
His rear air suspension failed, but he also had issues on his front mechanical suspension.
Oh, no.
There's a quote. I think our quote was over 10K.
Oh,
a lot of parts needed. There was some other electrical stuff as well. And he said, look, I'm just going to put the job on hold.
Yeah, I get that.
So I can't.
Yeah,
and like we said to him, if you do it bit by bit, you're going to double up on paying labor. So at the end of it, you're going to pay more. Now, that's fine for us.
Yeah.
But we're not doing you a service if we don't tell you that.
Right.
I don't want you to not spend 10 now and then over the next 6 months spend 20, because we're charging you the labor every single time to do the same work because you're doing part by part. So I just said to him, look, he said, I'm going to take the car back. I've got to travel next week, so I'll take it out your hair and I'll come back and we'll figure it out. When he said he was traveling, I said, look, why don't you just buy parts out overseas? There's options for you there. Buy them overseas and bring them in. So that's what he's doing. And, our market here is basically, by the time it gets to us, it's on its third, sometimes fourth markup.
Which is crazy.
Even from the dealer. The dealers are buying from their Middle East entity. So there's two markups by the time it's at the dealer. So they're selling it to us. We're putting a third with a third markup.
Yeah.
And then we're selling it to the customer. So parts are a lot cheaper outside of the country. So people that travel, a lot of people do travel for work from here.
Yeah.
They'll bring them back in, which, again, we don't penalize people for that. We're all in this together, right? We've got we've got to get it done, and we're much better off getting the actual car fixed and getting the labor time out of it and having the customer come back than saying no, or we're going to charge you double labor charges and they don't come back ever again.
Yeah.
So it's very, very tough for bread, milk and car parts, I think. It's just, the sort of three critical things you need living here.
Well, I hate buying stuff for my cars. I mean, look, they're not new. You keep them running. Thank you. You and TJ, you keep them running. They're safe, but they're old cars, and So this is the funny one, and how I'm leading into this is the conversation you hate having with people. So you were in here, drive up with DJ, and I go, Jeep sounded like it's got a turbocharger now. And basically the wife actually noticed. She says, the car's making a really weird noise. She goes, I don't know what's going on, but it can't be good. So I put up the hood and I'm listening. I'm going, it sounds like maybe a belt it was a bearing kind of sound. You know, that
rotational. Yeah.
Let's bring it in. DJ's, I said, we're talking with DJ, catching up. I said, would you just give it a listen? Sounds like a turbo. And he's going, your car doesn't have a turbo, so that's not a good thing. Gets out the stethoscope. He goes, it's a bearing on your alternator. And he says, it could last a long time, something like that.
Yeah.
And he said, look, if it was me this is a conversation you never want to have with people.
Yeah.
If it's me, I'd leave it and wait till it goes. And I was like, okay. Barely made it. I mean, we went and pick up the wife, go out for lunch. It's all parked, get back in the car, drive to another place, valet parks it, get the car back from the valet, driving home, fail.
Should have blamed the valet. Like that's what I was like.
Fails. And I mean, it was an epic failure because DJ's only instruction was, if the battery light comes on, you're done. Battery light comes on. And then, so I stopped the car, turn it back on, battery light goes off. I'm going, we're good to go for a little bit longer. So we do. And we're about, and I sent you that text, we're probably about 500 meters from the house at a set of lights turning. All sorts of warning lights start coming on. And I'm going, oh no, this is not good. And then we're doing a U-turn because I'm seeing the warning lights. But I'm looking at the temperature gauge because all I'm thinking is, if we can just get a little bit further, I see some lights wrong, but I'm looking at the temperature gauge and I'm just going, I literally get home. It hasn't started going bing, bing, none of that yet. But at one point, just as I'm driving up to my place, I'm literally rolling into the driveway. I've never seen so many lights come on. And at that moment, the car just stops. Like, I mean, every light goes off and the car just, it was basically someone at Jeep said, you dumbass, we know that you're going to keep driving with every light and you'll even keep driving if it's binging. So we are not going to let you do that. We put a fail safe in that when it gets to this point, everything will be disabled. And it did. It disabled everything. And I thought, oh no, this is not good. And near what I could figure was at that point, knowing what had happened, the alternator must have seized or the bearing or it slowed it down enough that it wasn't getting enough flow of water into the engine. It was still flowing clearly, but not enough. So it's going, we got a terminal error here. We're gonna lose this vehicle. We can't trust this driver. Turn it off. And it was the next day when the recovery guy comes to get it. So it was parked badly in the driveway. I had to get the other Jeep out and pull it.
Nice.
So the wife was in it, but there's no power. So the wife's in that one, and I've got a tow rope on it, just slowly as she's like manually.
This is effectively still the height of the summer.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Well, I was going to push it. But the wife says, well, you can just push it in. I start pushing and I just go, no. I'm like, it's like 45, 46. I'm sweating. I'm going, and there's nothing. I'm just, oh. So I get the other Jeep, put the tow rope on it. Say, would you mind just getting in? And again, and now everything's hot. And I just slowly maneuvered it. But it was the next day, the recovery guy comes. He puts the key in, starts it up and drives it onto the recovery truck. And I'm going, well, the sensors had time.
It's cooled down. The bearings probably shrunk down a bit.
Yeah. And I just thought that is the message from this is it's the worst conversation you ever want to have, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I would just leave it. And then 8 hours later.
I got a voice note from a customer this morning. It's a friend, not fair to call him just a customer. And he has a Range Rover. It's got a steering rack leak.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like 10K for the rack or whatever ridiculous amount of money it was. I can't remember.
I get to that point where it's going to be a 10K repair. It's like, it's not worth repairing my car anymore.
like most Range Rover owners, it's blind love with them.
Yeah.
Really well,
and that's the Jeep
and
thing
it's
too.
Same with the Wranglers, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are like that with Wranglers. But, the steering rack's so expensive and there's a lot of money been spent on this car and it has no residual value, really. 25, 30, 35K maybe. What he did, he bought an additive, which is one of those leak stop additives. Okay. Bought it from the US, which, big deal in America.
Yeah, got all those things.
Yeah. And it slowed the leak down.
Yeah.
So fantastic, right? And I just, and he suggested, he said, and quite, you know, nicely of him, said, why don't you buy some of this? I found it online. You buy some, it's relatively inexpensive and it'll save people, even if, because he wasn't fixing it anyway. He was just topping his oil up.
Yeah.
But, you know, sort of save the environment from wasting oil and save you money from 200 dirhams a litre or whatever it is, Land Rover steering oil. Put some of this in it. I think he said it cost him like $4.
Yeah.
So whatever. The issue is with stop leak stuff like that, the way it works most of the time, it thickens up the oil a little bit.
Yeah.
Which isn't ideal. But it conditions the seals. So there's a component of it which makes the seals a little bit softer and they puff up almost. Yeah. We use an oil called Krytox oil on the convertible roofs on Volkswagens. And I'm talking about, you know, you could have it rain in the UK and it would run in on some of the EOS roofs sometimes. You open the roof, set it in service position, clean all the seals with soapy water, dry them, put Krytox oil on it, close it back up after a couple of hours, put it back out in the rain and it won't leak.
Wow.
Like it genuinely put, and we're talking about such fine tolerances on engineered components that a fraction of a millimeter of difference is going to seal a seal. So that's great. But the problem is it doesn't last forever. And it also keeps the rubber supple to the point where it's likely and more liable to fail catastrophically rather than... Now, it's different on a roof
because
it's just a roof.
Yeah, but this is steering we're talking.
When it's something that's got masses of pressure going through it at times, when that fails, and so as a garage owner, you can have this conversation with a customer and say, look, we could try this for you. It might save you for a couple of weeks, might not improve things at all, might save you for a few months. And in those 3 months, maybe you can budget to save money for buying the steering rack, which you inevitably will need if you're keeping the car.
Yeah.
But to take the risk without that conversation, and even with that conversation of, well, it was dripping yesterday, but now it's pouring out.
Yeah.
Since you put that chemical stuff in.
It's gotten worse, yeah.
So obviously then we're sort of implicated in the demise.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult, like you say, that is a bad conversation to have with anybody. Yeah. Like, it might work, it might not, because you don't know. You genuinely don't know.
Well, and look, it's, you know, but beware of your advice. You're asking a mechanic. The car breaks down at the side of the road. The mechanic's going to know what to do to fix it.
Yeah, it's different.
It's totally different. But, I mean, you still want the advice, but just make sure you understand that the advice is tempered in the knowledge of the person who's giving it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it got sorted.
I'll tell you a different, another way as well, and you can answer this honestly, James, or as honestly as you want. If you're in the car on your own and it breaks down, it's not that much of a deal, is it? If you're going somewhere and you're late or whatever, it's not bad. But when you've got someone else in the car, particularly your wife, who knows what that is?
That's my phone.
Someone telling the battery is dying.
Yeah.
particularly if it's your wife or your partner.
Nice. It's very nice when you're doing a podcast.
Yeah, it sounds like we're genuinely like an old school garage.
We are. It's ringing. It's ringing there.
You've got all the technology to
remove. I hope it stops. No, I can't remove that.
But we... when you've got someone else in the car with you, what a nightmare.
That's it. What I don't mind if it's me.
Yeah.
Or
especially when it's like, you went to the garage today.
Yeah.
I thought you were going there this morning.
I did. I did give my wife the complete rundown of what DJ said. And he said, if that light comes on, and it was like, uh-oh. He goes, what's the matter? Yeah. Light came on. It's like, she goes, that is bad luck.
Yeah.
But it could have been worse. And that's what we said in that whole incident when all this came on. It could have failed at the turn.
Yeah.
That was fully backed up with traffic and I'm in the turning lane. And how would I mean, that would have been.
Yeah, the amount of cars we've recovered from traffic lights and U-turns and all sorts.
I mean, this would have been horrible because I would have been the guy out there trying to push it. And, you know, no one's going to be helping me. They're going to be beeping their horns and it would have been terrible.
Yeah, I remember when we were doing an MOT on a car in VW, and we used to do like £25 MOTs, which was sort of half the price. There's a minimum charge now that you have to charge for an MOT, but we'd do like half price deal, so everyone would take it to the dealer.
Yeah.
And we had a Polo in, I think it was, and we failed it because the boot, the rubber boot over the CV joint had split on one, whichever side it was, I don't know, and we'd given the customer a price. Yeah. No, it's too expensive. I'll do that myself. That was, let's say, the Wednesday. And then the Thursday morning, it's back in for a retest. The guy had put a new rubber boot on it. So we drove it in onto the MOT ramp. And the MOT ramp was sort of perpendicular to the traffic flow in the workshop. So you got like a full 90 degree turn to get it on and off. So car goes on the ramp, checks. Yep, done. Retest, passed. Reverse off the ramp. And as we make the full lock turn to get left, the joint just falls out of the CV, out of the drive shaft. The guy had obviously whacked the hell out of it, and he'd not put the lock ring back in, or he'd broken the lock ring, and it just fell apart on him, on us, in the middle of the workshop. So then what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do at that point? You can't even put it back together and pretend it didn't happen. And it's like, well, you know, we tried to offer you the solution. You've taken it upon yourself to fix it. And happy days, it's now in the middle of the workshop in a pile of grease, and everyone's shouting at it because it's in the way.
I had another aha moment, or another celebratory moment with my own vehicle. It was testing time. I did take the side windows out because they were a little foggy. But the nightmare was, we go to a couple of Taz Giels, which is the testing guys here. Five bays, eight cars in the line on each. We go to another one, same thing. And I'm just going, this is ridiculous. So I abandon it at that point. I just say, you know what? I'm weeks ahead of the testing period. And I say, you know what? I'm just going to do my old school. I'm going to go to the Arabian Center up in Cowanese. There's a third party that does it there.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And they've just expanded their test site to two bays.
Nice.
And I get there. And so I'm there at like 7 o'clock in the morning when it opens, because I'm thinking I got to be there. There's two cars in the bays getting done. There's no one behind me. And I say to the guy, I said, oh, man, it must get really busy here at night. He goes, not really. Now we've got two bays. And there's maybe a couple cars ahead of you, but he said, it's not like going to testing centers, and they do the same stuff.
Yeah.
They do exactly the same stuff. So it was happy days.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening to this podcast and you're here, fire yourself over to Arabian Center over Murdiff Cowanese.
We get more and more people asking us, or, allowing us to take their car in for tests for them. It's such a hassle. Because people didn't have to do it during COVID, COVID, right?
Yeah.
So you got used to, yes. Because it can, like, especially when it fails. Because you just don't know what to do then after that.
There was a guy, and I got the red one, and I'm going to have to get you to check, because there's some tire wear, abnormal tire wear, and I don't want to put new tires on it, but I might have to. There was a guy ahead of me who came out, and they failed his car because of the tires.
Yeah.
And nearest I can figure, because I was, you're standing there kind of looking, and he was looking too, and he wasn't happy. But nearest I can figure is he bought new tires, but they must have been a really super deal because they were really close to the expiry date. That's how he got dinged, because the tires look brand new to me.
Yeah.
Like, not even just shined up with some armor all. Like, these were newish tires, and that's what he got failed for.
They've always been quite strict on tires. Last sort of 7-8 years, haven't they? But they're getting strict on modifications now.
Oh, yeah. That's why they look at me and they say, oh, Jeep. Oh, this is, you haven't done anything to yours.
We had a Golf R that failed because the customer had put air suspension on it. And they failed it.
Wow. Then what do you do? You got to take the air suspension off.
You have to put your standard springs back on.
Uh-huh. How would they even know? I guess they
can see.
The car,
I can see. Yeah.
Well, that's the mods. They're all over it now.
Yeah.
They were over stickers for a while, but this is more important. The stickers were really great.
I mean, I think one of the problems with the stickers was the people that were having a little bit of a bit close to the bone with some of the stuff they had on there, right? Yeah.
But
you only get these stickers, James.
okay. Well,
Bluey. You've not got young kids, have you?
No.
You're out of this now, but there's a kids program called Bluey from Australia.
I do not have that.
But they're going on the R32 for when it gets ready, when it's ready for Amy to use.
Very nice.
But you can't be having stickers that they're offensive.
No. We got to wrap this up, but we're gonna pick up the next show. But I wanna just for a second just jump really quickly through my summer car rental.
Which
was a Mitsubishi ASX or AXS or...
ASX, Mitsubishi are right, yes, aren't they, at the minute? Well, I've always...
It was okay. Like, it was one of those guys, it looked kind of nice, it had four-wheel drive, thankfully, but the suspension wasn't really made for four-wheel drive. It was good for river crossing. I was in Costa Rica.
Nice.
Got to a point at one point, literally, I'm going somewhere, and I'm on the road, and we get there, and there is a river. And I'm literally stopped.
You've stopped.
I've stopped, and I'm looking. And this guy in a pickup truck comes up beside me, and he does the head nod. He says, follow me. And he knows where to cross. And thankfully he did, because, you know, we drove down the bank on stones. You know, I've got it in four-wheel at this point, and we're driving through the water. And I'm just going, thank God it hasn't rained, because I'm not sure this vehicle, even though it was lifted a little bit, would have made it. But the problem with
they're small and light, aren't they?
And the suspension was a city suspension, not... So we're hitting some dirt roads.
Not got any travel on it or anything.
We're in dirt roads with potholes. So there was this one route. We're going to the airport, dropping my son back at the airport. It's probably about a 2.5 hour trip.
Oh.
An hour is on a pothole road.
This sounds like a Top Gear challenge.
Oh, and you're driving on, you know, it's exhausting because you're weaving back and forth trying to find the right line, and you can see where people are going to miss.
Yeah.
But even missing the potholes, you still hit the potholes because there's so many. And all I kept thinking was, you know, this is a new car.
It was.
I'm trashing it.
It was.
I said, I'm trashing the thing. The suspension is just getting hammered because of this. And I just went, and, you know, river crossings, there were three. And it was, and then one time we crossed the river, someone else in a rental. And you can see where they've stormed. They just thought, we're going to, yeah, there they are at the other side. That car's finished. But the wife's looking, oh, I guess they, the wife's like, oh, no. The river's deep enough that,
yeah,
they sucked in.
They sucked water in.
Yeah, that game car's over. Done. That car's done.
Yeah,
and it was so. It was so. I always thought those cars looked cool. I wouldn't buy one. I mean, it was nice. I just. I couldn't own it. I couldn't own it.
It's so frustrating. I, coming from the sort of era I came from in the UK, and the way that the Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution, the rally car, was so revered and is revered for very good reason, and then they're making this tripe. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I went and there's a multivan on the ramp in there, and I went and transferred the ownership from the guy whose company owned it yesterday. He was talking to me. He's got a Ford Explorer, and he's like, he used to have a Jaguar XK. He said, it's the worst car I've ever owned, but it's the best car I've ever owned. He said, it's so much fun. He's like, I just constantly having to fix it. He said, this Ford is so boring. I was like, people ask us what car to buy, and I tell them, buy a Ford Explorer if you don't want to buy a Pajero. And write the rest of your time of enjoying driving off.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm never having a Pajero. He said, they're so boring. He's like, I felt like sitting in a retirement home. So it was like, you get what price point, I guess.
Yeah.
What do you want from a car?
Easy
took me to Auto Mechanica the other day, and he had a Mitsubishi Outlander, which is a rental. You know, leather interior.
Yeah, they're nice.
Front and rear camera.
Yeah. But you don't.
Tinny, and you shut the door, and it's like,
That was this ASX. It was.
But it's a rental, right?
It's a rental.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe they've seen that's where we can get rid of volume in the rental sector, because the rental sector's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Everywhere you go, there's rental car companies.
Well, let's talk about rentals next time.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Joey Woo Woo and more. And catch up again. This is a bit, Glenn, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, back on it.
We're back on it. Glenn Power, Powerworks Garage is where you can find him. I'm James Pikeway, and this is the Powerworks Podcast.